Sarah Michelle Gellar is joining for season two.
I know. She's going to be at Celebration along with her husband.
Yeah, which immediately I hadn't thought about it in a while until I saw like Sarah Michelle Gellar's joining season two, and then I thought, so that must mean her and Freddie Prinze are still married, right? Like they have to be.
I would assume, yeah.
Like they're not going to be on the same Star Wars show if they're not married, right?
I guess I kind of thought the same thing in a weird way.
What a weird career they've both had. Because she never really picked up after Buffy, but she's still like...
She did that show with Robin Williams.
And she had another show that lasted a few episodes a couple years ago. Like, she should have been a bigger star and never was, but yet she still could see...
I think
like,
she's still okay.
Perceived you know as a bigger like, star. He was writing for wrestling for a while.
Was he?
Yeah. Freddie Prinze Jr. was writing for WWE for a handful of years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
After Freddie got canceled.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Where were you in 62? I know where my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella, was in 1962. That was non-existent. The same can be said for me. Where were you in 1962 is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that tagline comes from, we'd love to hear about it in one of the three following ways. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your guests directly at us at moviesonup on the Twitter or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct and we choose you, you will be the recipient of a prize package which will be mailed to you from a galaxy far, far away, Dave's house.
And it'll get to you at light speed.
Indeed. That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We're Movies On Up. Where were you in 1962 is our tagline. If you can figure out what that is, the force is strong with you. The force is strong with us this week as we are kind of embarking on what will be sort of a project for the rest of the year. At least one of us is super jazzed about the new Star Wars flick that comes out at the end of the year. So we thought we'd take once a month from now till then and do an episode dedicated to one of the Star Wars flicks. This week, we are going to begin at the beginning with 1999's Phantom Menace. I think maybe a little bit to Dave's chagrin. I think he wanted to start with A New Hope to kind of ease into things, but I wanted to start
with New Hope because the whole reason we decided to do this, like, we're both very excited for Episode 7. Very, very, very excited. Ryan's going to Star Wars Celebration this week.
I'm there now.
Yeah, he's there now. So...
Coming to you from the galaxy.
He suggested doing it, and I like the idea. We'll do one, you know, one a month. We'll skip October. I think we'll have time to throw Clone Wars in there. But I wanted to start on a high note. I wanted to start with New Hope. But we're starting on a low note with Phantom Menace. Ryan doesn't have the bitterness towards this movie as that I do.
May not the bitterness that you do, but the full disclosure, this is not my favorite. I don't really like it all that much, but kind of where I come down on it is... It is the beginning. The story of Star Wars, as we know right now, 1 through 6, is the story of Anakin Skywalker. And this is where we start it. So it's a question that I've been asked. Basically, whenever people find out I'm a Star Wars fan, the first question is, do you know the touch of a woman? And then the second question kind of dovetails into that. And it's, how are you going to show the Star Wars movies to your kids? And it depends on what day of the week you get me. But right now, if you ask me today, I'm going to show 1 through 6 because I want them to understand that it's Luke Skywalker's great, Han Solo's great, but at least the first 6 movies aren't about them necessarily.
See, my kids have seen 4, 5, and 6 already. They have no idea that 1, 2, and 3
they exist.
They don't.
You're a terrible parent.
Like they'll probably see 7, 8, and 9 before they see 1, 2, and 3. I was gonna have them watch 1 with me as we watched it, but I'm not anti-remake. I'm not anti-sequel because I don't...
Or prequel. You
know, Kingdom of Crystal Skull, it was terrible, but it didn't ruin the other 3 Indiana Jones movies for me. So I'm not one of those that thinks like, oh, a bad current version is going to ruin this. But Phantom Menace is the closest that I've ever come to that feeling. I grew up loving Star Wars. Me and my brother were big time Star Wars. We had all the toys. I waited in line for the re-releases in like 96.
97.
Yeah. Star Wars was such a big part of my youth. And then like as I'm becoming a man, like I had moved away to go to college when this had come out. And, you know, I waited in line opening night, and I saw it in a packed theater. The music comes up, the title screen. It was one of the greatest moments of my life. And then just within an hour and a half, faded.
Or 2 hours and 13 minutes.
Yeah, it didn't take that long for me to dislike this movie. And it just left. It was so much anticipation just to be crushed. And, like, I still love the original Star Wars, but after Phantom Menace, Star Wars was never as big of my life as it was before that. And I realize that sounds terrible and doesn't make any sense, but, like, it was such a big part of my childhood. But then, like, right as I'm starting adulthood, I see this and I realize this Star Wars isn't going to be a big part of my adulthood.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's put a pin in that for half a second. We're going to get back to it because I think it's an interesting discussion about Star Wars as a child and then Star Wars as an adult. I do think the two are different. But what I do want to get into now, you talked about the anticipation, how really we hadn't had a Star Wars flick in about 16 years from Jedi to this. And I remember being out of my mind excited when this was coming out. I'd run home from school to watch Total Request live because they would have the music video for Duel of the Fates on there, and I would just want to see that. I had a buddy that was waiting in line to buy tickets because his parents let him skip school. I had to go to school, but he was getting my ticket, so it was all good. And when it released on that Wednesday, I could not get to the theater quick enough. And this is actually the first time I've looked at the box office numbers for, like, the opening weekend for Episode 1. It made $64.8 million, which seems ridiculously low.
Right now, that's on par with a bomb, essentially. Yes. $64 million now is on par with a bomb, but if you consider a couple things, 1999, the movies weren't making what they are now, but opening weekend's a little misleading because it opened on a Wednesday. So that $64 million between Friday and Sunday isn't considering Wednesday-Thursday showing. So I know its first week it did a good amount of money, just that weekend's a little misleading.
Yeah, but even at $64.8 million, it was still good for number one in the box office that week. No real big surprise. It's probably also not that big of a surprise that it is one of the higher grossing movies of all time, despite what you may or may not think about the movie. It still made an ass ton of money. To be specific, $431.5 million domestically, another $552.5 million worldwide. Again, that's including the re-releases, but when you bundle all that together, it's over $1 billion worldwide. That $431.5 million domestically puts it number five on the all-time domestic charts. For the first time in Movies on Up history, Dave, I think you have a shot at correctly identifying the movie directly below it in sixth place.
Sixth place would be A New Hope.
That is correct. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree there. Episode 4 is in number 6. In fourth place, the movie directly above it.
That'd be The Dark Knight.
That would be The Dark Knight. By the time we get to A New Hope, I won't ask you the movie directly above it because I feel like that one's kind of a freebie. But usually we're so far into like the hundreds, the thousands, you have no idea.
And you know what? We did a little behind the curtain. We did kind of do this ahead of time because Ryan said like, oh, you might actually know the movies. And I did know them. I don't think I would know 7, though, because I know 1 through 6 pretty easily.
So obviously the movie went on to gross an absolute ton of money. And I can remember going to see The Matrix, not because I wanted to see The Matrix, but because I knew that the trailer for Episode 1 was in front of The Matrix. And after I saw Darth Maul, the double-bladed lightsaber, I could not have wanted to give them my money quick enough. You talk a lot about trailers and how, you know, they really impact you, and the best trailers you ever saw, Jurassic Park is one that you mention a lot. Trailers don't affect me in the same way, and that's probably why we don't talk a lot about trailers anymore, because I'm somewhat resistant to it. But this trailer was a magic bullet. Maybe it's just because it was Star Wars anyway. You could have just said, Star Wars, there's a new one, and I'd have been good.
Again, take yourself back to 1999. Trailers meant a lot more. You had to go see The Matrix to see this. I wasn't
getting it online.
Now you'll hear like, oh, the Episode 7 trailer will premiere with Avengers 2. By Tuesday or Wednesday, it'll be online. And that's its second trailer. We've had a teaser already. In 99, you didn't have this buildup where there's 4 or 5 different versions of a trailer. You got a trailer before a movie. If you were late for the movie, SOL.
And I was not late for The Matrix.
Yeah, no. It worked out well for The Matrix, but I think The Matrix kind of delivered because people generally liked that movie.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of that box office came from the Phantom Menace trailer.
And God bless them. That's great teamwork there. But I think something that we've already mentioned is how excited I was and how excited, you know, you were to go see this movie. And I don't know if it was necessarily almost set up for failure in a way. It had been 16 years since we blew up the Death Star and since the teddy bears burned Darth Vader. And for those 16 years, we went from having, well, that's it for Star Wars, to seeing the re-releases. If you were a nerd like me, you read the books that came out. By 1999, you were ready for some new Star Wars stories. And at no point did it enter my mind that there was a possibility I could be disappointed.
No. Compare Dark Knight Rises to it, where the first two Batmans were so good that there's no way the third one's going to be a letdown. It kind of was. Like, I liked it, but it wasn't on par with those two. This one was nowhere near on par with the original three, and there's no way in your head that this can be bad. But then it is. Looking back on it, I waited in line for the 97 re-releases. They added a lot of stuff. A lot of the stuff they added was foreshadowing to a lot of my complaints about Phantom Menace. The CGI Jabba, I hated that scene. If you don't like this scene, there's a lot more of it to come. The transitions look different. The worlds look different. They looked like they did in Phantom Menace, which I didn't like. It felt different. And if you'd have been paying attention and noticed the re-releases, like, oh, this is what George Lucas wants. George Lucas gets what he wants in Phantom Menace. It just wasn't anywhere near to what I wanted.
You betcha the CG characters. I mean, Yoda was a CG character in episode one, and that was, people hated that. And even the worlds, everything looked, for something that was really supposed to take place 20 to 30 years before episode four, everything looked newer. And I guess the Lucasfilm retconning that they do to kind of explain that is, well, you know, before the Empire
before
took over,
before the war, everything was nicer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Detroit in 1970 compared to Detroit in 2015.
Right. That's exactly what they use. I guess if you're me, okay, fine. Plus the fact that Star Wars was made, I mean, it came out in 1977. And we're a couple years removed from that. It's going to be very difficult to make a movie that looks like it actually took place 30 years before 1977, and I don't think we would have necessarily wanted that.
No, but you know, it's not so much the look. Like, I understand it's going to look newer. It didn't have the charm.
And there, the CGI characters are a lot of that reason.
There's something about a puppet Yoda that, you know,
practical.
Maybe it doesn't look the most realistic, but it's there.
They're
it's
aliens.
Tangible.
How realistic do they need to look?
All the worlds felt unique. They felt like a world where, in Phantom Menace, all the worlds felt like a tapestry almost, whereas for Ewok Land, they had to go and get like a wooded area. That was their planet. For Hoth, they had to
get a snow area.
Like, the stuff felt tangible. Even the worlds felt like, okay, they're in a galaxy far, far away, but these are worlds that I can relate to. Whereas Phantom Menace, every world just looked like, hey, paint a space village. And that's what they did. They just looked like Bob Ross painting up a space village with a happy sun and four moons in the sky or whatever.
Happy couple suns if you're on Tatooine. As much as I don't necessarily like to do it, I sort of comb the internet for Star Wars trolls and find out exactly what pisses a lot of people off. And definitely the look of the film, how it looks much newer than the rest of them. That's something that gets mentioned a lot. I've got kind of a list of about 8 more things that seem to piss people off. And if I really wanted to, I probably could have just made a top 300 things that make people mad about.
Before we, because this is going to be negative. Like, I'm going to be way more negative than Ryan. Ryan's kind of catering to me on all the negativity. There were good stuff about it. I thought Darth Maul was a very cool character. I think Liam Neeson and McGregor, Ewan McGregor, I think they're really, really good. A lot of the supporting cast is great. And I really like Natalie Portman in it. I think she does really well. And then Emperor Palpatine, or Senator Palpatine.
Ian McDermott,
yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I like that he comes back. Like, I like that it was him from the originals. I thought that was, because even he himself thought that they would just cast somebody younger. He was shocked to come back. So, I mean, there were a lot of good performances, but there was some stuff that brought those performances down. But, I mean, there were some good things there.
Yeah,
Now let's talk about the movie.
Yeah, let's just get into
it. Now that that's out of the way.
Now that we've said all the good things we're going to say about it, I'm actually going to start with one thing that I don't particularly care for, and that is this concept of the Force, which we've all been kind of okay with. It was kind of a part of the original trilogy, and it wasn't all that well explained. It was kind of half religion, half superpower, and I think we were all okay with that, and we had been for 20 years up until that point. And then Lucas decided to actually spell it out for you and say that there were these things in your blood called midichlorians, and that's kind of what would tell you who was going to be strong with the Force and who wasn't. It became less mystical and more scientific, and I think that took a little bit, I mean, if you'll pardon the pun, it took a little bit of the magic out of it.
They were just became mutant. They were now X-Men instead of magical wizards that honed their skills.
Yeah, and I don't know why he did that. I don't think that that needed to be explained. I really don't.
No, I don't think people were sitting around for the 32 years since New Hope came out thinking like, all right, so the Force is cool and all, but what's the science behind it?
Right, but
I need the science behind this magical thing in this science fiction movie.
Can I blood test someone? It seems, I don't want to say necessarily convenient, but it just seems really anticlimactic. Is you can just tell by looking at somebody's blood if they're going to be a good Jedi or not, just by the amount of these little midichlorian critters
because
that live in them.
Here's the thing, is like, there's still the council. So you still have to get approval to be in the club, even though like your biology puts you in that club. But now you have to go to the club of the club and get approval to be in the club. It's not, hey, this dude might have the Force. I'd like to bring him under my wing and teach him. No, it's, hey, this dude has the Force. Is it cool if he comes in? And like, nah, we don't need all of them. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make an incredible amount of sense, but it was a convenient way to really explain just how powerful this Anakin Skywalker kid could be, because his midichlorian count is higher than even Yoda's. And that's kind of the next thing that really seems to piss people off, is Darth Vader as a kid, and a pretty annoying kid at that. I will say that as much as you may hate Jake Lloyd, especially coming out of Phantom Menace, you think, oh, it can't possibly get worse. Well, I got sour news for you, Jack.
It goes down. He's so
sure
bad
does.
In this movie. And, like, when I highlighted the goods, I highlight all acting.
Except for Jake Lloyd.
But, like, he's so bad that he brings everything else down. It's a combination. The kid's not a good actor. George Lucas, I don't think, is a good director as far as working with actors. And he's an even worse writer. George Lucas is the reason why a story by credit exists, because great story, terrible screenplay. But Jake Lloyd's just so bad. He's so bad, and just the mindset of standing next to Natalie Portman, and in your head you're thinking like, they're gonna pork. He's taking her to Pound Town, and it's just like, it's so weird.
Not in this movie.
Not in this movie, but it's in your head, and it's so weird that here's this gorgeous, beautiful adult woman. She's supposed to be 14. She wasn't 14. Get Natalie Portman.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
If Natalie Portman from The Professional is in this movie, it's not as creepy. But this is like an adult Natalie Portman that's about to bone this little kid that jumps through a giant growth spurt while she stays exactly the same. But we'll talk about that. And
he had a lot of midichlorians. That explains it.
He's so terribly cast, terribly written. I want him to get his legs and shit cut off. Like, I just wish we didn't have to wait 3 movies for him to be shut up.
I think that writing Anakin as a child was always going to be a tough road to hoe. You have Darth Vader, who, since 1977, was one of the most badass characters in the history of film. And then we go back in 1999, and we see him as this blonde 9-year-old who is completely socially inept. And I don't think there was any way you could have made this kid cool enough to, yeah, I could see this dude being an all right Darth Vader. You weren't going to be able to get from point A to point V very smoothly.
But I mean, I guess it's like Luke Skywalker is a whiny little baby
yes.
in A New Hope, but he turns into something else. Like he grows throughout the movie. Jake Lloyd just sits there.
Well, in fairness, Luke Skywalker kind of grew throughout three movies. We really only got, with Jake Lloyd, it was a one-shot deal.
One too many.
Maybe one too many.
And then two too many at the next guy.
Right. Two too many of the droids. You don't like the fact that, speaking of Darth Vader, he built C-3PO, and you don't like the fact that R2-D2 and 3PO show up in this movie. You think it's fan service.
I do. And if I trusted George Lucas as a writer, maybe I would feel like it wasn't fan service. But there's so many things in all three of the movies that just come off like total fan service. These two being involved in the first one, I get it makes sense. The robots. Like, I get, you know.
But really, I mean,
the logic makes sense. Anakin makes it, they go, and they're left with Jimmy Smits. And I get it. It makes sense. But I feel like he wrote these as he went along. Because one of the biggest complaints of this movie we haven't got to yet, people hated it. All of a sudden, he's not as big of an issue in the next two movies. After being one of the top four build in this movie, he's all of a sudden irrelevant in the next two.
We'll get to it next. But at least in the case of the droids, episode one is an origin story, kind of. I mean, it's definitely an origin story for Anakin, who is pretty much, in my opinion, what the next five movies are about. We don't necessarily see Obi-Wan's origin, but we see him very early on in his process. The prequel trilogy, we literally see the origin of Luke and Leia. So, I mean, it kind of explains where a lot of these characters kind of come from. And I think that is important to the next set, as the droids are. I think it makes sense to kind of show their origins. And I don't feel like they were forced on you. I do think that Star Wars, and this is something you mentioned at the top, that when you were a kid, you loved Star Wars. It was super important to you, and me too. And the way that we receive this new trilogy, I think sometimes factors into the fact that we're not kids anymore. Star Wars, I think, is still sort of written for kids. And because we're not 8 or 9 anymore, we kind of miss it. I hated Jar Jar as much as the next guy. But I think that kids really like Jar Jar. And that's why he's in the movie as much as he is.
It's a valid point. It is. But like, 30-some-year-old me can watch Star Wars, love it, watch Empire, and realize this is one of the better movies I've ever seen in my life.
Empire, of all of them, was probably the one that was made least for kids.
Yeah, and then Return of the Jedi, I like it enough.
Teddy bears take down the Empire in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, the famous scene in Ewok Land.
On the forest moon of Ewok Land.
I get what you're saying, but I don't feel like they were released as kids' movies in 77. I mean, that was before me. I did see the next two in theaters. Like, I was only 3 when Empire came out.
1977, 1980, and 1982.
I don't feel like they were made for kids as much as this. I guess my problem is, I feel like this was conceived as a kids movie, but written for the parents. On the surface, it's a kids movie. Underneath that first layer, it's a political thriller.
Yeah.
So it's All the President's Men for children, and it's a mess tonally.
It's like a Tom Clancy movie with literally a CGI character with poop jokes.
Yes.
I agree with you. I do think that, as I maintain, Star Wars is written for kids, and that's why you have Jar Jar, and that's why you have C-3PO, who the kids can laugh at as, oh, my parts are showing. But underneath that, really, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, is... It's setting
a trade agreement.
Yes, it's setting up the Clone War, which comes about in a way that I think is hard for kids to understand. I was a freshman in high school when this movie came out. I'm not even sure that I understood the plot then.
I still don't understand the plot.
Fair enough. And I think that's where this movie, one of the biggest complaints that I have about it is the amount of exposition that is in it. Now, granted, it's not technically, it's not only setting the stage for the next two movies, it's also setting the stage for the three that follow that.
Star Wars, they all open with the title screen, the exposition right off the bat.
Yeah.
If you're giving me 3 paragraphs that I have to read before I even get to the movie, lay off the exposition. I've read a novel already.
If it can't be said in 3 paragraphs, it doesn't need to be said.
And this comes from Lucas not being a good writer, because he takes exposition break. He derails the story. It's paced terribly.
Well, we'll get to that.
He has the story in his head, but he can't get it down. Like, it's written really bad, and that's why I wish it was story by George Lucas written by a competent writer, because I feel like there's a good movie hiding in here. I feel like there's so many bad things Lucas-related that if there was another set of... I mean, look at the Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. Lucas really had nothing to do with that movie.
I wouldn't say he had nothing to do with it. He didn't direct it, which I think helps an awful lot. That's where I think that this movie, another one of the places it really falls short, is it goes in fits and starts. It's a little slow at the beginning when we're doing the negotiations. When the lightsabers kick on, it's kind of cool for a while. And then it slows down. And then it kind of kicks back up. It always, for me, and for you too, because we kind of talked about it before, always dies in the same point. And for me, it's the pod race scene. It goes on way too long. And I understand that action movies have car chase scenes. There's a lot of speeder bike chases or starship chases.
The whole concept of this scene is, I do remember being, I like Greg Proops. I've been always been a Greg Proops fan, so I like him being there. But I just hate everything about this scene. I hate that it exists. It's like your cliche from your dance hall movie to where, like, oh, if you win this race, you know, we'll save the dance hall. That's this mentality. Oh, I want this kid that's got the midichlorians. If he wins this pod race, you give him your freedom. That's out of a Saved by the Bell episode.
But it does.
That slavery episode they did.
Yeah, right. The one where Hot Sunday was slave to the record company. I know that one well. It does set up Anakin as being a skilled pilot and his sort of precognition abilities. But the scene didn't need to go for 20 minutes. It's a short film.
Yeah, it seems so out of place. It's so long. I just feel like there were other ways to
shorten that scene to, like, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, and I think we're okay.
Or do something else. The whole scene puts a sour taste in my mouth for a half an hour. A 2.5-hour movie.
2 hours and 13 minutes. But it does seem like at least an hour and a half is the pod racing scene. While we're on Tatooine, something that I guess it really didn't hit me the first time, but then after I read it on the internet, I was like, ah, I kind of see where these guys are coming from. You've got some characters in the movie that have come off as sort of stereotypical. Watto, the guy that bargains with Qui-Gon Jinn for Anakin's freedom. Some people have thought that that's maybe a depiction of Jewish folks. He's got a rather large nose and he's pretty cheap. I would maybe stop short on that one to say that that's necessarily stereotypically Jewish. I think he was greedy, and that's about as far as I look into it. And there's a lot of characters in Star Wars that have weird-looking noses because they're aliens, and they, you know, okay, whatever. A lot of people kind of point to Jar Jar as being
the bumbling, goofy.
Yeah, and maybe like an African-American stereotype. I didn't necessarily see that. I think his accent kind of put people off a little bit. The one that I kind of do have a little bit of problem with is the Viceroy character. All the guys from the Trade Federation kind of had this Asian flair to their speech, and their eyes looked a little bit slanty. So I think people have kind of looked at those guys and said, well, I mean, they're Asians because they're good with math, they're good with money. And again, it's not something I necessarily picked up on, especially in 1999 watching the movie. But I guess going back on it, I think some of that stuff could have been relatively easy to avoid. You know, you could have just had the Viceroy character speak with a different accent or no accent. You don't need one. But I mean, I think the Watto and the Jar Jar is, I think with Jar Jar, I think you're just beating a dead horse there.
Yeah, I mean, if you Google racism in the Phantom Menace, you get quite a few things. I think some of it's okay. I'm not okay. Not the racism is okay.
No, racism, I think some, not okay.
I think some of the arguments might be valid, but I think some of them are just reaching.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not looking at it deeply enough, or maybe it's my white privilege to where I don't.
We're two
I
white guys. Yeah.
So I think some of them, I could see where they're getting them, but I don't know that they were intentional.
I don't think that they were. Because, I mean, this is the same guy that wrote the original trilogy, and I don't think there's a lot of racism going on there.
No, this is going to be probably the worst thing I've ever said, but I feel like,
oh, that's going to,
if the racism is as deeply into it as people think, I think you're giving George Lucas too much credit as a writer. I don't think he's a good enough writer to hide it. And like some of these arguments are reaching too far. Obviously, like Viceroy one is on there, and like Jar Jar and the Jamaican people, but it's orange. He's a stupid alien. Like, I don't make the Jamaican connection. The dude being Jewish or Italian, he's an alien. I think George Lucas is just coming up with dumb aliens. Like, I don't think he's...
I think the stereotype was greedy, and it's bumbling. It's things like, that's a stereotype.
Yeah,
but
I don't
not...
think it's any race. I don't think he's...
I would tend to agree with that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
and
I'm
I'll never justify
naive.
Racism. If no. I felt like there was something there, I would not hesitate, but... Like we talked in the Gremlins episode, people tried to paint it as racist, and it's, I think sometimes you're reaching way too hard.
One character that I don't necessarily think anyone thought was racist, I didn't find any mentions of Darth Maul being racist, probably because he doesn't say anything in the movie, so there's no reason for you to believe that he's racist. Darth Maul, when I saw that guy, I didn't even need to hear him talk. I didn't care. With the horns, like the face tattoos, the face paint. I mean, I couldn't have been any more on board. And then, oh, shit, you mean this guy has a double blade? That can happen?
You know, when I saw Darth Maul in that trailer, because going into the first three, it's like, okay, how do you have a villain
better than
Darth Vader? And then I see Darth Maul, and it's like, three movies of fighting this guy? Sign me up. Okay. I am on board. I'm going to get three movies of him being a badass. Yes, 100%. I am on board. George Lucas, I love you. I'll never say a bad thing about you in my life. Give me Darth Maul for three movies.
And
spoiler alert.
He does, yeah. In case you haven't seen it, he doesn't quite make it through this one. I think that was the most disappointing thing for me. I was so hyped. Really, none of these characters. I didn't know who Qui-Gon Jinn was before I saw the movie.
I'd heard of Obi-Wan.
Yeah, once or twice, I think I had heard of him. But a lot of these characters, I didn't know anything about. Oh, that's Jules, and he's a Jedi now. Great, Master L. Jackson. I'm excited about that. And the Jedi Council guys all look cool. But they weren't really central to this movie. Darth Maul was. He was in all of the trailers. He was in all of the merchandising. And you were thinking...
He was the Darth Vader of this franchise.
Exactly. This was the centerpiece that they were going to build going forward.
In reality, he was Oddjob of this movie.
Yeah. And when they dispatched him in the way that they did, you know what I mean? Like, he kind of just gets tricked. And it happens so quickly, you're like, wait, what the hell? No.
I don't think I've ever been so appalled by a movie death in my life. Like, I remember the moment that he got cut in half because I went in like, oh, I'm going to watch this dude for three movies. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to see Darth Vader fight Darth Maul. It's going to be fantastic. And then he gets cut in half, and I'm sitting next to my buddy Tom Farley, who I went to the movies with, and I reached over and I grabbed him. Like, I grabbed his arm like, did you see that? Like, that didn't happen, right? Like,
He missed, right?
I fell asleep, and I had this terrible dream, right? Like, is everybody else in this packed theater, did they see that? Something is adding up here. I'm getting punked, right? In 7 years, Ashton Kutcher is going to come out and tell me I'm on a prank show, correct?
And yes, he did. Because you know, years after this movie came out, and I think that a lot of the same thing sort of happened with Boba Fett, although it took a little bit longer for that to happen, because he at least made it into another movie, spoiler alert again, but they've managed to bring the character back. Darth Maul on the Clone Wars cartoon, they were like, hey, you know what? Our bad. He's really not dead. In another attempt to, you know, in typical Lucas fashion, cash in on merchandising and bring back a character that was so cool, cooler than he realized at the time, they kind of brought him back. And that was maybe fan service, but they should have just not killed him in the first place.
I mean, Ray Park did awesome. You know who did the voice for Darth Maul? Which it's weird to think there was a Darth Maul voice actor.
Yeah, I mean, if you hear Ray Park, he's not the most menacing guy.
Peter Serafinowicz. Same guy from Guardians of the Galaxy that says, what a bunch of a-holes.
Yeah, but I mean, Ray Park physically was amazing. And really, even the fight scenes in this movie aren't the best of the new trilogy. I mean, they get a lot better. But I remember seeing Darth Maul being so high on that. And then when they killed him, and in episode 2, we get Christopher Lee. And I love Christopher Lee. But I was like, wait a minute.
I take your spiky-headed red dude with a dual-ended lightsaber, and I raise you an old dude.
Yeah, like a 90-year-old man with a single-bladed lightsaber, with albeit like a pimped-out hilt. But one of these things is not like the other, and I know that pissed a lot of people off. And that is one of the handful of times that I think Lucas actually listened to the fans and realized, shit, we really got to do something with Darth Maul, because he deserved better than that. Nobody cared. And this is just how cool Darth Maul was. Nobody cared that Qui-Gon Jinn died. Not one person.
No.
And he was a good guy, damn it.
Yeah. I just imagine in 20 years, Lucas re-releasing this movie and just replacing Darth Maul with Jar Jar in that scene.
Our fans have made that. I've seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, because, I mean, Jar Jar, very prominent in this movie. Not as
maybe
much.
Maybe that's another one of the handful of times that Lucas listened. I think it was maybe a little too Jar Jar heavy, and they went a different direction in the next two movies, which, I mean, as bad as episode one is, I think episode two is even worse. And if we'd have been force-fed more Jar Jar in that, oh, God.
I'll be honest. I have not seen episode two all the way through. I've seen parts after Phantom Menace. I had kind of washed my hands of it. I lived with Jason West at the time that Clones Attacking was on TV, and he explained some to me, and I was just like, eh. But then for episode three, I went and saw it in theaters. But two, I just kind of skipped completely. Like, I really don't know much about it except for Jango's head rolling to a young Boba Fett.
That happens.
Like, I remember that. So I'm excited to watch episode two, I guess, which I'll probably feel the same disappointment as when I was excited to watch Phantom Menace.
I don't want to get too much necessarily into episode two yet, because goodness knows we're going to have something to talk about when we get to episode two. And I can't fill 45 minutes just talking about Kit Fisto. But walking out of episode one, as quote-unquote disappointed as I was, I still saw the movie like three or four times in the theaters. Like, I don't know if I was hoping that it would get better or just because it was new Star Wars, I didn't care.
After seeing it in theaters, after watching The Phantom Menace, you know when the next time I saw it was?
Today?
This week.
Well, yeah. This week,
to rewatch it. Like, it left such a sour. I didn't want to give it a second chance. I tried to go into it this time, like, getting out of that mindset and thinking, like, because sometimes I've been wrong. Sometimes I've hated a movie and then watch it a couple years later and realize I was wrong. I was right. I was dead on with this because I wanted to go in and try to pinpoint when it went south, but it doesn't take long. Like, it's just not a good movie, and it doesn't take long to establish that, like, oh, this isn't what you came here for. This isn't the droid you're looking for.
The pacing is tough. We've mentioned that. I obviously have seen it numerous times since its release in 99, and it hasn't come anywhere close to ruining the other movies for me. I will say that it slightly tempered my excitement for episode two. I was kind of, it was like, you know, you burn your hand on the stove. You're a little nervous about putting it back there again. I mean, I still saw episode two the first day, but it's interesting because we are almost in the same position right now as we were leading in to 1999. We have new Star Wars coming out, albeit this one is at the end of the year, which is kind of different for Star Wars. But you and I were both disappointed with episode one. But I cannot fathom a world in which episode seven disappoints me.
No, I couldn't fathom a world where episode one would disappoint.
Absolutely.
And it did. But yep. Now we've had a 90-second trailer, and that's it, a teaser. And I can't imagine a world where episode seven is bad. And as much of a bad taste that one put in my mouth, I remember when this was announced that, oh, Disney's buying Star Wars. They are going to make three more movies. We were recording that day. Yeah. That news broke. We used to record at my apartment, my old apartment, and I would wait for Ryan outside to let him in. And I remember the news broke like an hour before he was coming there. And I went outside. I met him at the street, and he got out of the car. And we both just kind of said, plans changed.
What are we
talking
about today?
This is back when we would outline shows, and they were way detailed outlines. This one day, it was just like, plans are changing. Like, this is our episode. And, you know, that was the episode, was we talked about the Star Wars news. And as much as I had the bad taste in my mouth from the original trilogy, I was stoked. I do want more Star Wars. I think more Star Wars after 4, 5, and 6 makes more sense. So I
sure.
think
they don't have to set anything up.
No, in that sense, it's easier to be excited about because there's so many ways you can go with it. And I don't know the end game. I know where most of these dudes end up in 1, 2, and 3.
Because I didn't see him in 4. So
yeah, so I'm excited. And the casting, like, I love the cast. I love everything about it. I cannot... As bitter as I am about this movie, like, I'll still be there.
I think the reasons that we don't love one, it seems like a lot of these are taken care of by the time we get to 7. Lucas is not directing it. J.J. Abrams is directing it.
Lucas has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah, they give him credit for the characters, and I'm sure, like, he was able to give a thumbs up, thumbs down about the whole thing. But Abrams... being a writer and director on this, couldn't think of a guy better suited. Lawrence Kasdan, who was part of when Star Wars was its best, he was around for that. So I feel like it's in really good hands, and maybe it's me being naive, but I would be shocked if in December we do a podcast where I'm going, oh, fuck, they did it to me again.
I can't. Imagine it. I mean, I can't. It's not... I've seen most of the people that are in it act, and they're not Jake Lloyd or Hayden Christensen.
That's true.
I'm excited. Like, I'm really, really excited about this movie.
Not that I need necessarily an excuse to watch Star Wars, but now I'm going to see at least one for the next several months because, you know, we're going to be doing... I'm not as excited about doing episode 2, but... we'll get through it because I really like 3.
The only reason I'm excited about 2 is because I've never seen it all the way through. So I have that to look forward to. 3, I don't hate. 4, 5, and 6, I love. I love the timing of this episode because growing up, like, my brother loved Star Wars. And I've mentioned my brother Gary many, many times. My love of movies came from my brother. Like, my love of Star Wars came from my brother. We record a few weeks at a time, so, you know, that's no secret, but March 27th, my brother passed away. Like, I have talked about his fight with cancer before, and I've gotten cool things through email and through tweets and everything, and I've told him everything, and he was always tickled and liked that random people cared. So, he passed away in March, and I just wanted to thank anybody who's ever said any nice things about him. And wished them well because I did pass those on and they kind of gave them a smile. They kind of made them feel kind of cool. So, but yeah, he passed on and the timing is cool because I didn't get to see episode 1 with my brother. Like, I had moved away. So maybe that altered my experience a lot too, that my love growing up of Star Wars was, you know, watching it in the living room with my brother, any chance we could, like having it on VHS, and just we'd watch it all the time. So maybe that had a little bit to do with it, and maybe that's why my adult life Star Wars hasn't been as prevalent as, you know, my childhood. But he loved it all the way till the end. He would never ever say a bad word about Star Wars, and so yeah, I'm excited to watch all of them because it's hard for me to think of Star Wars or anything without thinking of my brother. And like I said, I got my love of movies from him. I got my love of Star Wars from him. So to be able to celebrate both of those in the string of episodes we're going to do leading up to December, I'm pretty excited about it.
Until next week.